are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, April 29th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, we're back. Meanwhile, the stonewalling has begun as the Trump administration won't testify on anything. Meanwhile, Joe Biden trips into the 2020 presidential race, and Elizabeth Warren drops a massive student debt plan and calls for Donald Trump's impeachment. Busy week for her. Meanwhile, Supreme Court hears the census citizen question. Get ready for a partisan ruling. Meanwhile, a federal court strikes down Michigan's districts drawn by Republicans, again, subject to a SCOTUS ruling. Washington State introduces the first long-term care benefit. Just the beginning on that. And we've been gone for a week. Trump, still racist. 55% of Americans say they will never vote for him, but a majority are against impeachment. Meanwhile, workers reach a tentative deal with Stop and Shop. That's 33,000 striking workers across Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. Marco Rubio says Russians hacked into Florida's elections in 2016, just in a couple of counties. Don't worry about it. Pretty sure they didn't change anything. Whatever. And Medicare for All will get a hearing this week, as will Bill Barr get another hearing this week. Terror attacks in California leave one shot dead in a synagogue. In a separate attack in California, eight injured in a car attack seeking to kill Muslims. And of course, 250 dead, 500 injured in Sri Lanka. Socialist strength and hold in Spain. Lula gets an interview in Brazil, is first in prison. The NRA is in crisis. And lastly, incarceration rates drop in this country. Some good news.
You're welcome.
There you go. All that and more on today's Majority Report. Yes, we are back. I hope that you enjoyed the interviews that we ran during the course of the week. Don't sleep on those, folks. We pick some very good interviews for the week that we're off because we know that people love our liveness.
Some meaty nonfiction.
Some meaty nonfiction.
That's how I like to think of the interviews we do on vacation.
Right.
It's got a bit more nutritional value in the long term. It'll stay with you. Like a probiotic.
Right. Maybe we should get the marketing team to work on some of this.
I thought that was the marketing team.
I was going to say, maybe we need a new marketing team. Yeah,
Brendan has a very health-centric view of the world. I respect it.
But do not sleep on those, folks. Go check them out. And as always, you can support this program by becoming a member at Join the Majority Report. During vacation, we end up losing a couple of members, and I forgot to pitch it during that week. So if you've been thinking about becoming a member, now's the time to join. Head over to jointhemajorityreport.com. We have so many plans for the future, and we always have plans for the future. Let's start, though, with something that is in the past, and that was Meghan McCain on this week, ABC's This Week. Now, I know you're asking yourself, wait a second. This Week is supposed to be a network news show where you would get, I mean, you would either interview politicians or newsmakers or someone who really has a strong sense of what's going on in terms of politics. Now, I understand Meghan McCain is on The View because The View is supposed to be about people who don't know anything about anything, but have opinions about it. And that's fine. I mean, everybody has an opinion. Everybody. And it's interesting to hear people who are not like experts on stuff, but may read into stuff a little bit, share their opinions. It's The View. That's the nature of it. The View. That's why they call it The View. And so, yeah, it makes sense for Meghan McCain, who is about as not expert at anything. Doesn't seem to be, you know, I mean, I've had a personal experience with her. She seemed perfectly nice in that narrow context of which we related, but it was a trivia style show. Have I got news for you? Like a low, you know, low threshold and not great at it. I don't judge people that way. I'm just saying that was my assessment. Pertinent information for this, because she's now on a network news show pontificating, saying some of the stupidest stuff. If it wasn't so really, in many respects, offensive, it would be just stupid. Here she is pontificating on the shooting that took place in a synagogue, I think around the San Diego area in California, where a woman was shot to death. She was jumping in front of the rabbi, actually, who was being fired upon. Rabbi, I think, lost part of his hand. There was a couple other injuries. It was a 19-year-old with an AR-15 who spends his time on 8chan, which is like, I guess, you know, the dark web. They don't pretend it's just about generally about ideas. A lot of those ideas are white supremacist and anti-Semitic. And this guy had bragged about, you know, he was going to do something like this. And he had done it timed within, six months to the date of the Pittsburgh shooting. And was inspired by the Christchurch shooting. And here's Meghan McCain making what is really an incredibly offensive point about this. Really having to make it about somehow both sides.
Much more quickly than they could with Christchurch, but that is a real issue.
Yeah, and one that I think that Silicon Valley should have their feet held to the fire. I do think when we're having conversations about anti-Semitism, we should be looking at the most extreme on both sides. And I would bring up Congresswoman Ilhan Omar and some of her comments that got so much attention. And in my opinion, Nancy Pelosi wasn't hard enough in her response to her, you know, trafficking in anti-Semitic language, talking about all about the Benjamins and how Jewish people had hypnotized the world. So I think when you're talking about rhetoric and you want to talk about President Trump, and by the way, I agree that he needs to have his feet held to the fire as well, but we're talking about it on both sides of the aisle as well.
Pause it. Now, let's just take the low-hanging fruit here. The idea that Ilhan Omar was in any way inspiring a white supremacist to do anything is laughable on its face. But Meghan McCain also lied about what Ilhan Omar said in that quote. She never said anything about the Jews. She said that Israel had hypnotized the Congress insofar as their ability to even critique it. When she'd said it was all about the Benjamins, it was about literally about the lobbyists who were impacting the Israeli policy within Congress. But the idea that it's both sides are inspiring the shooting, I want to see the shooter who was inspired by Ilhan Omar. I mean, it's pathological. It's pathological, her Ilhan Omar, whatever you would call that, obsession, fixation.
Obsession. But it's also it's also so obviously cynical because she's using it to advance her career, right? Like, this is what gets her a speaking spot at AIPAC. This is her way of actually not just being a joke on The View.
Well,
so she's actually inciting against Ilhan Omar, in my opinion, and, actually, of course, totally belittling the actual serious issue of anti-Semitism through her disgusting crusade against her.
Let's break this down because we can't know, it's our opinion that she's doing this for any other reason. Now, one of them could be because she sees it as a career ticket. It gives her something interesting to say because she doesn't have a lot of interesting things to say. This is an interesting thing to say. She's that person who you go to say both sides when a white supremacist shoots at Jews. So you could say both sides. Or it could just be she's really, really not bright and really, really feels like she needs to justify why she carries water for the conservative element in this country. And it's really more about her wondering if there is if she's aligned with people who may be problematic. Or it could be she also has a problem with Muslims. I mean, it could be any of those things. And I think we should, just to be fair, note that lack of intelligence is not mutually exclusive to any of these answers. But it really is what is really reprehensible in my mind. And I understand it. It's ABC. They're trying to promote The View and this and that. But, like, honestly, like, can you really look yourself in the mirror, George Stephanopoulos, and say, like, we had a great show today. We had Meghan McCain on to discuss anti-Semitism. Really? Wow. Like, I mean, there are undoubtedly some offspring of politicians who have savvy about politics. None come to mind, frankly. But undoubtedly they exist. But she's just a prominent one. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, folks, we all want a haven, a place that feels uniquely you. With Joybird, you get one-of-a-kind furniture crafted to your unique taste. You can turn your ideas into reality with hundreds of styles and options, from rich buttery leather to the plushest velvet you've ever felt. Want a sofa in aquatic blue? A love seat in bubblegum pink? If you can dream it, Joybird can make it a reality. They even have a beautiful selection of outdoor sofas, lounge chairs, and tables. Plus, their free personal design consultants can help you nail down your design. They also offer a range of kid and pet-friendly upholstery options so your creations can stand the test of time. I wish I was aware of Joybird when we got our couch, because there's nothing like two kids that can't destroy a couch for you. Best of all, thanks to their 365 home day trial, day home trial, 365-day home trial. If you don't love your Joybird, you can return it for a full refund. See how Joybird can help you design your dream space. Find your joy today at joybird.com/majority. You can create the furniture that brings you joy. That's joybird.com/majority and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the code majority. joybird.com/majority. Right around the corner is a Joybird store.
That's a very nice
looking
place.
I've spent a lot of time in that store sitting on different couches going like, we'll see.
You rustle paper while you do it too?
I sit there with paper and I go,
You take the ad copy with you?
Joybird. Maybe the right Bob's Burgers, maybe if I get into the Bob's Burgers movie.
time to get. My living arrangement right now precludes my ability to buy furniture unilaterally. I'm not going to go any further into that, but. First off, you trying to drink more water? Both my kids. I took my kids down to Florida this week. I'll get into that a little bit later. It was exhausting. But they were as healthy, I think, as they've ever been because I brought a bunch of Liquid IV with me. Liquid IV hydrates you 2 to 3 times faster and more efficiently than water alone with an added bonus of vitamin C, B3, B5, B6, and B12. Liquid IV is the fastest growing wellness brand. You can find them everywhere, even at Costco. Use Liquid IV to fuel tough workouts, help prevent muscle fatigue, and promote healthy post-workout recovery. It's a great alternative to traditional sugary sports drinks because there's no artificial flavors or preservatives. It's non-GMO, it's vegan, free of gluten, free of dairy and soy. Better yet, it comes in convenient TSA-friendly powder packs that are perfect for travel and preventing jet lag and altitude sickness. So we're in the sun a lot, the kids.
In Florida.
And every day I was like, guys, drink this 16-ounce thing of water. They will not do it. The Liquid IV tastes great. They drank it, and Mila did not get headaches. Saul did not get flush. I don't know. You know, I don't know how you measure these things, but 5 days this week, the kids did great. They felt great, but I also knew that they were totally hydrated. And then for me, there was a lot of pina coladas at this place I was at. So this is the way I sort of dealt with that.
At the bar?
Yep.
Pina colada.
It was funny because I went to like sort of a resort thing to take, you know, so the kids could have stuff to do. And I was like literally fighting with other kids in the pina colada line. I had to specifically say non-virgin pina colada. I love Liquid IV. And I know you will too. Right now, my listeners get 25% off at liquidiv.com when you use my code MAJORITY at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order at Liquid IV's website. Just go to liquidiv.com, enter my promo code MAJORITY. That's liquidiv.com, promo code MAJORITY. Don't wait. Start properly hydrating today. And folks, lastly, you spend a third of your life in your sheets. It's about time for a bedding upgrade. Name the winner of the best online betting category by Good Housekeeping. Brooklinen has more than 35,000 five-star reviews. I will tell you right now, I don't know which number mine is, but one of them is mine. This is because by eliminating the middleman, working directly with manufacturers and customers, Brooklinen offers luxury sheets without the luxury markup. And with over 25 colors and patterns, these sheets don't just feel great, they look great too. Okay, so for me, I'm totally in on the pinstripe. That's what I've decided. I'm going to totally pinstripe it. And I now have the slate, the navy. I don't know if they offer those anymore, but they also have one that's like a sort of like a pumpkin color. It looks good. It looks real good. I love it. I've told everybody this before, but I get the, I think they call it percale, whatever. They have two different types. And you can get the classic sort of crispy, clean, cool cotton ones. That's the ones I do. You don't have to. I'm just saying.
You're free to choose.
Free to choose. My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I have ever slept on. And now it's time for your upgrade. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer for just my listeners. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code MAJORITY at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen's so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. And I will tell you something. A set of sheets like this, like a good set of cotton sheets, they will last you for 20 years. Believe me. Believe me. The only way to get 10% off your first order and free shipping is to use promo code MAJORITY at brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen, BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code MAJORITY. Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever. Okay, so couple of big important things that took place this week, obviously, and I'm going to hit these three things. I want to talk about Warren's plan. I want to talk about Biden jumping into the race. I want to talk about this ruling in Michigan about the gerrymandering that's going on there, because that's pretty big. Now, the NRA is also, I should tell you, came out this week, is apparently in some type of crisis. And I haven't read into this fully, but there's been some leadership things, and there's a big story in the New Yorker magazine, which we're going to dig into, and I'm going to try and get in touch with the reporter, either talk to them on Ring of Fire or have them on here. And but the long and short of it is, the Attorney General's office in New York, I think, is starting to investigate them. Here's the weird part. Just so you have some basic knowledge about this story, the NRA is chartered in New York State, which is the last place you would imagine it would be chartered. It was chartered, I guess, following, or I think, on the eve of the Civil War, as an organization that was, it was chartered, started by, I think, a couple of Union generals who were unimpressed with the riflemanship of people in New York State and want them to be better. And so this association was set up to train them outside of the military. And so it's in New York State. And so this means they are subject to investigations from the New York State Attorney General. Not good. Not good. And the thing is, they could recharter in a different state, but they would, but their assets are New York based. Oh. And there's like 400, they are like a $400 million, $450 million enterprise. And so there are other gun organizations, some which are like, you know, more gunnish than less culture than the NRA, but they don't nearly have the same funding. So this would be a good malignant force to have not be in the world anymore. So we will talk more about this going forward, but I just wanted to give you some of those basic facts so that you know. So let's talk about Joe Biden. This guy, we didn't pull that tweet that I saw. I tried to stay off of Twitter over the vacation. My whole plan was to go to like this like resorty place where they have programs for the kids, and I could put the kids in at like 9 in the morning, and they're like, see you guys at like 3:30 or 4. Dad's going to read a book. And that didn't work.
You didn't get any reading done?
I'd never had more than 4 minutes, contiguous minutes of like solitude over the course of like 16 hours a day. It was the most exhausting thing. We had a great time. I love being with my kids, and that was fun, but it was exhausting. So all I could do was like, just like to escape was to look at political Twitter. That was, yeah, I need another vacation. But so I see this from, and this was, I guess this was like, maybe this was just a couple of days ago. Maybe it was Friday.
Yeah.
And I guess it was at night. So we were maybe traveling at this point. And Jen Psaki, who is a mom, and she's a vice president at the Carnegie Endowment. She's a CNN contributor. She's at We Advisors. I'm just looking at her. And National Security Action, former White House comms chief, former State Department spokesperson. And this is the tweet that she had. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a lot of issues that Joe Biden has around women. You know, the touchy thing and getting into people's personal space. I think that's indicative of a guy who doesn't feel like he has any boundaries, who is really very cocksure of himself. And that is something that is, you know, it helps to be a white guy who's been in the Senate for 40 years or whatever it is, to have that sense like, hey, there's no one's personal space. I don't even have to contemplate the idea of personal space. And of course, you don't think that. Being a white guy who's been in the Senate for 40 years is, you know, it's, you know, they say like he's never having to say sorry. It's never having to think about other people. Right. So it becomes super easy for you to say, oh, I'm going to have my people float that Stacey Abrams is going to be my VP candidate because that's going to help me. That's going to help shore up the problems I have with women and with maybe, and particularly African-American women because of the whole Anita Hill thing. We'll talk about that in a minute. Now, if you're a person who has respect for other people and you contemplate, hey, maybe she doesn't want to be exploited in that way, you should reach out to her and say, like, hey, I'm contemplating. Do you mind if, you know? Yeah. Maybe we should try it. Well, and then we found out later that, no, he never had that conversation. She was rather upset about it. I think it was pretty clear from her public pronouncements. You know, she didn't say Joe Biden's an a-hole, but she basically said, I mean, that was the subtext, in my opinion. Anyways, so Joe Biden has these problems with women. That's it. Anita Hill. Just what he did with Stacey Abrams, he did the same thing with Elizabeth Warren, actually, 4 years ago, 2016. And he knew, again, that was like, I have a problem with women. That's Joe Biden saying, I have a problem with women. I have a problem with my relationship to the banks. And that's why he chose Elizabeth Warren to float that year. Because that gives you the idea of like, wait a second, if he's open to Elizabeth Warren, maybe he's not the guy that I think he is. So Jen Psaki, I don't know if she is a surrogate for him. I don't know if she's going to be working in his comms. I don't know. I mean, in some circles, apparently this type of thing is like a huge scandal if they haven't announced that they're working and they're actually doing this. But I'm not one of those people who thinks that's a huge scandal. But here she is writing, Elizabeth Warren would be a beloved Harvard Law professor, not a presidential candidate, if Barack Obama and Joe Biden had not worked with her to make her idea to form a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau law. Now, first off, she's wrong because Elizabeth Warren was chosen by Harry Reid to sit on a special committee to deal with TARP when the financial crisis stopped. And I don't know if it was called TARP at the time, but to sit on a committee to look at the financial crisis well before Barack Obama was president. Secondly, I want to see the documents from that White House. If Joe Biden is going to claim any credit for putting for choosing Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, who they used to call Senator from MBNA. This is a guy who has been in the banking industry. Now, look, does that make you a horrible person? Well, I mean, in my opinion, not great. But you know, for most people, I don't. You know, that's fine. But Joe Biden is the reason why the bankruptcy law does not allow for kids to get out of student debt or students in bankruptcy. Joe Biden protected the credit card industry in terms of their protections from people who couldn't afford to pay their credit card bills. That's just who Joe Biden is. And if he wants to claim credit for putting Elizabeth Warren on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, I want to see the documents on that. But lastly, are we going to now analyze Joe Biden? The only reason why Joe Biden can even contemplate running for president a third time after his massive losses is because Barack Obama made him vice president. And I mean, is that going to be the center of his campaign? Is that the way that everybody's going to assess that Joe Biden would just be another aged guy in the Senate at this point? Maybe he would have been challenged by now.
A Neil Kinnock plagiarist.
Exactly.
Top line for him, Neil Kinnock plagiarist.
I mean, honestly, absolutely. You would never hear anybody say that about Joe Biden, even though nothing could be closer to the truth.
And of course, I mean, we don't know what Biden's role. I agree with you. I'd love to see that documentation. We do know that she came to national prominence battling this grotesque bankruptcy bill.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That is actually the real reason that she isn't just a quote unquote beloved Harvard professor.
Right.
Because she was a national academic and activist against this atrocious piece of legislation that Joe Biden was the prime architect of.
But now what that tweeter, I can't remember her name, is again, she is doing, you'll recall, how did Scott Brown run against her? Professor, 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 professor. Okay? She is diminishing what Warren has done in creating the most durable, aggressive, what people consider the best government agency we have, set up in such a way that the Republicans can't unwind it, and like they've tried to unwind just about everything else. And there's a little pat on the head, and they send a woman out to do this because at least they have the sensitivity to realize that if they had a male spokesperson do this, they could never get away with it. But make no mistake about it. It is just as demeaning, misogynist, sexist as it would be if a guy was sent out to do it. It's just a little bit more cynical. It really is, I mean, stunning. I'm surprised that hasn't gotten a lot more attention. A lot more attention. Here is Joe Biden talking about complaining about the bankruptcy bill and how too many people are getting a free ride in this thing. An awful lot of people who are discharging debt who shouldn't, he said during a 2001 Senate hearing. Something is up. And that happened when the economy was booming, absolutely booming. Now, I'm not a real smart fellow, maybe, but there's something wrong. In other words, he's arguing that when the economy goes up, no one should be going into bankruptcy.
No one should be
going. We also know, and maybe he didn't care at that time, but at least 50% of bankruptcies, particularly in 2001, were a function of medical debt, which, and maybe you're not a smart fellow, it doesn't matter what the economy is doing. If you get hit by a bus, it can cost you and sink you into debt. 50% of all personal bankruptcies.
Some people, well, this is a letter from the same article that Warren wrote in 2005. Some people do abuse the bankruptcy system, but the overwhelming majority of people in bankruptcy are in financial distress as a result of job loss, medical expense, divorce, or a combination of those causes.
There is not an institution, a system, a business, an agency, a program that is not abused to some extent. I will cop to this right now. At the hotel we stayed at, you give a card and you get a beach towel. Okay? And I sent my kids up to go get an extra beach towel. And I told them, just tell them Dad has the card. So we had four towels so that we could save seats. Nice. Corruption happens everywhere. But the idea that that's going to be the excuse. You don't think there's corruption in the credit card business? I mean, give me a break. Right. And so when Joe Biden sends out either his attack dogs or his friends of his attack dogs or either paid or just simpatico surrogates to go out there and attack Elizabeth Warren, there's a reason why he does it. Because he's got a lot of things to answer for. But one of the biggest is how this guy is married to the banks, married to the credit card companies, and not just in a sort of a neutral, benign way, but in a way that fundamentally targets American citizens, that makes their lives materially worse, that allows for predatory practices. And Elizabeth Warren knows it. And that's why he's got to get out ahead and say, she would be nothing but a beloved law professor if it wasn't for me.
I mean,
at a time when the biggest financial institutions in this country were trying to put the squeeze on millions of hardworking families, there was nobody to stand up for them. I got in that fight because they just didn't have anyone. And Joe Biden was on the side of the credit card companies.
That's it. Joe Biden was on the side of the credit card. She's got the receipts. That's the problem. She's got the receipts. So, I mean, it's an odd choice. You would imagine, like, Joe Biden's not in Elizabeth Warren's lane. So why is the first thing that they're doing when they come out the gate in terms of attacking anybody is attacking Elizabeth Warren? They're attacking Elizabeth Warren because they know that she knows who Joe Biden really is. And so they have to discredit her and make her seem like an uppity, ungracious, you know, beloved. Would you ever call like a male a beloved? Like, you know, it's unbelievable how sort of like gendered that attack was. I was really taken aback. And I know Joe will just go like, "Oh, Father, forgive me. I have sinned because I called her beloved." Right?
It's a weird, I mean, I've heard it. There's gendered. It's also, and I hope that, I mean, it would be bizarre if this is what they were doing for obvious reasons, but it's true. I have heard that for men who are basically like beloved, like very old. Like a beloved professor who's retiring.
Oh, right, like a beloved grandma.
Like
and
beloved grandpa or grandma.
The professor thing also works in terms of like, who are you going to listen to? That egghead over there who's telling you that I'm the one who screwed you on your credit card bills? Or me? Because Joe is really posturing.
Oh, yeah, that's his whole thing.
As he's really posturing as like the guy's guy, right? Like the hard hat. Joe hard hat.
Middle class Joe.
Yeah, middle class Joe. Here he is. Where was it? Where was this? Where he was speaking? This number three.
Oh, it says announcement video.
Oh wait. Oh, this is the announcement video. Where did you today? All right, let's hear the announcement video. Today, he is in Pittsburgh, talking to union guys. He is officially kicking off his campaign at the Teamsters Local 429 in Pittsburgh. Do you know where he was Thursday in the unofficial kickoff? He was in Philadelphia at a Comcast fundraiser. Now, aside from Comcast being a wretched company, there was a longtime Biden ally there bundling money, a guy named Stephen Kozin. This comes from Eric Levitz in New York Magazine. Kozin is the chairman of Kozin O'Connor. That is a big law firm.
Do they help people recover from bankruptcies and medical debts?
You know
what?
They
provide a social service?
You know what? They don't.
Oh, surprising.
You know, Mike Elk over at the Payday Report, noted on Wednesday that if you go to Kozin O'Connor's website, they have a breakdown of what they do for their clients. Labor relations and disputes. So in other words, you got to imagine Joe Hardhat, his best bud, probably protects unions, fights on behalf of unions. And, oh, wait a second. Ooh, no, actually, this is weird. It's the opposite. Kozin O'Connor represents a broad spectrum of private and public sector employers in labor relations and disputes. In other words, they fight against unions. For our unionized clients, we handle unfair labor practice proceedings and grievance arbitrations, negotiate individual and multi-employer collective bargaining agreements, prepare for and respond to picket lines, strikes, lockouts, and other economic campaigns, and work with employers during union election campaigns. Huh.
Help them more effectively establish unions in a hostile corporate environment?
Right. We also help employers avoid unionization through positive employee relations and regain non-union status when employees indicate they no longer wish to be union represented. So in other words, they're a union-busting law firm.
Scranton Joe.
Scranton
Bankruptcy.
Joe.
I want you to lose your life because you got hit by a car and I hang around with some of the scummiest law firms on planet Earth.
But hold on. He also likes to write and script. Here we go. Here's his campaign video.
Charlottesville, Virginia is home to the author of one of the great documents in human history. We know it by heart. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. We've heard it so often, it's almost a cliche, but it's who we are. We haven't always lived up to these ideals. Jefferson himself didn't, but we have never before walked away from them. Charlottesville is also home to a defining moment for this nation in the last few years. It was there on August of 2017 we saw Klansmen and white supremacists and neo-Nazis come out in the open. Their crazed faces, illuminated by torches, veins bulging, and bearing the fangs of racism, chanting the same anti-Semitic bile heard across Europe in the 30s. And they were met by a courageous group of Americans, and a violent clash ensued. And a brave young woman lost her life. And that's when we heard the words of the President of the United States that stunned the world and shocked the conscience of this nation. He said there were, quote, some very fine people on both sides. Very fine people on both sides? With those words, the President of the United States assigned a moral equivalence between those spreading hate and those with the courage to stand against it. And in that moment, I knew the threat to this nation was unlike any I had ever seen in my lifetime. I wrote at the time that we're in the battle for the soul of this nation. Well, that's even more true today. We are in the battle for the soul of this nation. I believe history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time. But if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation, who we are. And I cannot stand by and watch that happen. The core values of this nation.
Oh, God. I don't know.
Here we go. Come on, man. It's the montage now.
I can't.
Dude,
I can't.
Hella silent,
but,
bro.
But I want to remind Joe Biden that one of the things that Donald Trump embraces is anti-unionism. Joe Biden apparently has no problem at least accepting money from some of the biggest anti-union fighters in the country. One of the things that Donald Trump also embraces would be the harshest type of relationship between creditors and those in debt in this country, which apparently Joe Biden has a history of. Dismissive misogyny, acting as if women are simply props for you in some way, like Stacey Abrams or Elizabeth Warren or, frankly, Heather Heyer. Heather Heyer's mom does not appreciate her child being basically reduced to Joe Biden's pitch for why he should be president.
Of course, it's never far from your mind and your heart. Did former VP Biden call you about this?
I got a call from him yesterday at 4:30 in the afternoon. That was the first time I had ever spoken to Joe Biden or anybody related to his office or anything.
What did he say?
I was trying to remember how the conversation started. I remember we talked a lot about bereavement because, you know, he's lost a son and a wife and daughter. And we talked about how forming a foundation helps you survive. But that's really all the kinds of things we talked about. I think he said something about I would have reached out sooner, but I wasn't sure how you would feel. And I commented, yes, I noticed you didn't mention her name because you hadn't contacted me. So we sort of acknowledge that much.
Do you wish that he had mentioned her name?
Not particularly. It's not about her. The issue is about the hate. It's not about Heather.
Yeah. And so was he calling for your approval or to make sure that you were okay? I mean, what was the upshot of his call?
Probably to make sure I was okay. Apparently, there were rumors swirling that I was devastated and traumatized. none of those things were true.
So in other words, Joe Biden is on a tour right now to make sure he doesn't mess up and appear as if he was invested in these questions, maybe a little bit more than he was. Maybe just a little bit more than he was. I mean, I happen to think, you know, Joe Biden right now, I think, is basically at the top of the most of the polls at this point. But I have a feeling a lot of this stuff is going to catch up with him. Here is Joe Biden's non-apology to Anita Hill. And apparently Anita Hill, we'll read what she said afterwards.
Knowing you, for as long as I have, I don't know why it took you so long to call her. I wish it had happened earlier.
Well, I tell you what the deal was. I did not... Since I had publicly apologized for the way she was treated, I'd publicly said it, I publicly had given for out credit for her, the contribution she made to begin to change this culture in a significant way, that what I didn't want to do, and I didn't want to, quote, invade her space. I didn't want to get in the situation where this became, and then I went when I heard all this about and it was legitimate, expecting a call every time the phone rang. So I spoke to some leading women advocates in this area, someone knew her, and I said, could you see whether she'd take my call?
Yeah.
And I was grateful she took my call.
You know, I think what she wants you to say is, I'm sorry for the way I treated you, not for the way you were treated. I think that would be closer.
Well, but... I'm sorry the way she got treated. In terms of, I never heard say, if you go back and look what I said and didn't say, I don't think I treated her badly. I took on her opposition. What I couldn't figure out how to do, and we still haven't figured it out.
Yeah.
How do you stop people from asking inflammatory questions?
Okay, so there's Joe Biden saying, I did nothing wrong. When I knew there was three other women who would corroborate at least that type of behavior, of being a victim of that behavior, and I did not bring them in front of the committee, I did nothing wrong. When I let her out there to dangle in the wind, knowing that there was corroboration, I did nothing wrong. Everything is in the passive voice. This is a guy who doesn't get it. What would be so bad for him to say? You got to ask yourself, is it just sheer arrogance? This guy's willing to do just about anything to become president. Is it just sheer arrogance? Or is he afraid that if he apologizes that he's kowtowing too much to the people that he wants to appeal to? It's one of those two things. I don't know which is worse.
A more narrow point is, as a chair of the committee, wouldn't he have been in a position to, as an example, like he said, he doesn't know how to stop defamatory statements. If you watch that clip of particularly Arlen Specter just like terrorizing her and trying to completely eviscerate her character in life, he wouldn't have been in a position to step over him and say, hey, you need to reorient your line of questioning here. You can ask a question, you can critique, you can defend your witness, but you're just using a national, national platform. You're using this hearing to just, you know, personally attack her and potentially even endanger her life. You can't do that. I mean, wouldn't he have been in a position to do even the narrow metric that he just set for himself?
I mean, now you're asking him to ignore Senate comedy and
is that where
criticize
well,
one
great.
Of his fellow?
Well, that probably was it, right?
I would
imagine. But I mean, he just set that standard for himself.
He just
said, what can I do about those comments? My understanding is, chairman of a committee, you can actually do a little bit.
Or
when one of your colleagues starts terrorizing,
we could look back
on
TV and see that you, you may have, like, you were like, hey, wait a second. Like, even if you couldn't get them to stop, like, show some measure of defense.
This is disgusting. I object to it.
All right. Before we get to the fun half, I want to talk about Elizabeth Warren's the student debt plan, because this is pretty great. And
this is a program, she goes even further than Bernie Sanders. I mean, let's be honest here. Regardless of, there are people out there who I can understand are nervous about the government, you know, actually coming to the material aid of its citizens. I'm not sure why this would be a concern for people, but it is. A lot of us are very used to people sort of just like, you know, whispering that. Like that's sort of like a second part of the program. You know, some type of notion of fiscal responsibility, which is just really, it's a nothing term. It doesn't mean
moral
anything.
Hazard.
Moral hazard, whatnot. But there are really only two people who are presenting any type of plans in this race that are in any way moving things forward away from what Trumpism and Republicanism is. I think everybody is on the same page. We should be very strongly anti-Nazis. We should be very strongly anti-bigotry. I don't think there's anybody in the Democratic Party who wouldn't agree with that statement. I think some are better than others on things, particularly sexism. But broadly speaking, the only thing that's left is who is thinking about the problems that Americans face and offering solutions. And really, Bernie and Warren are the only two who are doing it. And I have to say that Warren is outstripping everybody in terms of what she's proposing, both in terms of the scope and the number of things that she's thinking about. She has come out with a plan that not only calls for one free or a system of free university college in every state, public college. They exist already. It's just a matter of funding them. Some of them are bigger systems than others, depending on the state and whatnot. But, and certainly they were more or less in existence 35 years ago, 40 years ago, at least in many states. But what this plan would do is it would cancel $50,000 in student loan debt for every person with a household income under $100,000. And then it's basically like a sliding scale. It would give substantial debt cancellation to every person with household income between $100,000 and $250,000. And anybody making over $250,000, it would not relieve their student debt. So it would basically take care of 90 to 95% of student debt in this country. Existing student debt, which everyone from like the president of the Homeowners Association of America says it's the greatest inhibition to starter homes, to any economist, well, I'll tell you out there, it is a huge drag on the economy, just sheerly from a productivity standpoint, but also from the perspective of like of innovation, of entrepreneurship, of starting small businesses. And then if you don't even want to look at it from such sort of crass economic terms, people going out and pursuing the lives that they want to pursue. Like we don't get the teachers that we should be getting because people are afraid of the debt that they have and they have to go do something that's going to make them more money on a consistent basis. And yeah, we could talk about any types of professions or we talk about entrepreneurship or whatever it is. And it's changing also the nature of why people go to get an education. And here's the thing. It's not working. It's not giving the return on investment, in part because a lot of training has been offloaded. The expense of training has been offloaded by corporations onto basically the students and their future workers. So it will give debt relief to about 95% of Americans who have student loan. 75%, it would be entirely forgiven. It would make public 2- and 4-year institutions tuition free. It would expand Pell Grant funding to go toward additional college costs like housing, transportation, food, and books. And this is really big.
It would cut for-profit colleges from receiving any federal funds. That includes federal student loans or military benefits.
That will do so much to undermine that whole thing.
It will make it disappear overnight.
It will disappear. That's amazing.
If you know anything, and you can go back to listen to the interview I did with Tressie Cotton.
McMillan Cotton.
Something like 90 to 95%. Of the for-profit universities get their, or I should say, something like 90% of the revenue that for-profit universities get come from taxpayer-funded student loans that then these students rarely see a return on their investment, end up dropping out of the program. These programs are geared towards just holding them through their second payment, which is the largest, you know, which then is the majority of their student loan payment. And that's when the return on investment in terms of holding the students starts to drop for these institutions, businesses. And that's why under the Obama administration, when they started cracking down on the accreditation companies that would accredit these other companies as being colleges and universities, you saw like ITT go out of business overnight. Because once the accreditation, which allows you to get a student loan, gets revoked, student loans can't be spent on that university. They go out of business because they're completely funded by the government in that respect. And there's very, very little data, and all they do is collect data at these schools, believe me, that shows that there's a significant return on investment. And a lot of these people who are going to these schools are basically like 25 to 45-year-old African-American women. In addition, and they make the point of saying that the majority of students who attend for-profit colleges default within 3 to 5 years after they begin repaying what they owe. The majority of students within 3 to 5 years. It would also create a $50 billion fund for historically black colleges and universities and minority-serving institutions and add more money to it over time. Why? Because if you are not aware, and maybe you haven't listened to this program over the past 4 or 5 years, we have had in this country, well after the end of the Civil War, I should remind people, and the end of slavery, a government-sponsored, also problems in the private sector, obviously, as well. But even the government has been involved in systemically denying black people the greatest source of intergenerational wealth through real estate, through home ownership, because loans were backed with covenants that said you couldn't sell to black people. I mean, people didn't have the right to vote. You didn't have civil rights until 1965. That there is less wealth in the black community. And as such, there's less money to be spent on giving back to universities for endowment. So the idea is shore up the endowments and the operating budgets of these colleges.
By the way, if you're a white person and want to go to HBCU, you can just do that.
Yes.
They allow
that's
that.
That's true.
Yes.
This is very true.
It's available to white people too. You could maybe, with the help of this program, get some financial aid from that university, from one of those historically black colleges provided by the government. Now, understand, you'd still have financial aid. You'd still have just as many private colleges as you have now. I would contend that you would see prices begin to flatten. I don't know if they would drop, but the rate of increase would stop, because if people have an option, a solid option that is going to be no cost, you're going to start to see a lot more low-cost options, too. It's going to decrease the pressure
You still may have some Pell Grants and this and that to go to other universities if you want. You still probably would have college loans that might be available in some fashion or another. Maybe government loans, maybe private ones. I'm not sure. If you want to go to a university that is not free or whatnot, there'll be options. Now, where does the money come from? Well, we could just print it. But Elizabeth Warren understands that there are people who are concerned that we need to have pay-fors. She has a proposed tax on America's ultra-millionaires and billionaires, which includes the 75,000 wealthiest families in the country. 75,000. Those making over $50 million. That's nuts. That's nuts. It would put an annual 2% tax on the wealth above 50 million and a 1% tax on wealth above 1 billion. Now I know. I hear everybody bitching now. It's like, what? Are you kidding me? I got to pay $1 million a year and I'm left with only $49 million in wealth as I'm generating God knows how much money. It's like, what's the point? I might as well just go on vacation. Stop working. Sure. So much. Like, I had all that planned. I was going to do all that.
I think the max NBA contract is something like $35 million a year.
I mean, it's just, I don't even know why, like, this is even, the idea that we don't already do this is just obscene. Warren campaign estimates this would raise $2.75 trillion in revenue over 10 years, meaning her debt forgiveness and universal education would cost less than half of the total revenue raised. And that tax she proposes is so that she has created a fund to fund the many proposals that she's offering. The best argument I heard, and best as in the most laughable, was like, it's a slap in the face to people who've paid off their loans. Yep. You recall all the people who were upset during the Great Depression when the FDR supported mortgage payments.
Slap in the face. All those people,
slap in the face.
And let this be a slap in the face for all those who've been financially responsible.
Here's
suckers.
Here's a slap in the face. When I went to college, it was like $15,000 a year.
Right.
How about the slap in the face that's coming to me when I got to send my kid to college and it's
$55,000
Somebody
a year?
Told me it was $75,000 to go to NYU.
Yeah, well, I believe that. Yeah, NYU is going to be on the upper reaches of that racket.
I was having this conversation with somebody and I was like, wait, what? What?
Woke a mile up in a sweat. Oh, Dad, what is it? You're not going to NYU.
Practice your goddamn singing. I'm already training Saul to fence. That's what I read somewhere that like you get a fencing scholarship.
That's a good obscure one.
Exactly. Yep, you got to find something narrow.
Yep.
He likes pirates.
Fencing and like Ukrainian or something.
Alternatively, Elizabeth Warren becomes president and she convinces the Senate. I mean, the beauty of these proposals, and obviously, you know, anybody can come up with any proposals as a presidential candidate, and they can't guarantee delivery. But it certainly enhances the chances that they'll get the delivery. And there's a lot of political scientific research, actually. It shows that that presidential candidates deliver on most of their promises. And, you know, we have seen what a Republican Congress is willing to bend themselves into a pretzel to provide for Donald Trump's, you know, everybody's going to wear their underwear on the outside and only white people can drive, you know, pronouncements, essentially. But this is also, in the words of Bill Burton, forcing us to dare to something the imagination.
And maybe we need a solution to it that risks the imagination of a new kind of possibility.
Actually, I was thinking of the whole time you were explaining that excellent policy set of how upsetting it was going to be for Howard Schultz. Of course, not to read it. Like, he'll just read the headlines, but that's probably sent him into his own, like, emotional lather for a couple of days himself.
I feel like the one under-examined part about Biden entering the race is where does Howard Schultz do now?
Howard Schultz is going to I think he is this close to officially saying, well, look, remember that piece that came out in Politico a couple of months ago? The Wall Street guys said in that piece, they said, the people that are not acceptable to them are Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Everybody else right. is doable. I think Schultz is right on the verge of formally making that. I mean, that's obviously what his position yeah. is. Yes.
Right. All right. Lastly, let's just check in on this Judge Napolitano, because obviously there was and I'm still winding my way through the Mueller report. It is quite clear. There's a couple things about the Mueller thing, because obviously there was we had a little contention here. And we're going to have Marcy Wheeler on sometime in the coming week or two, as soon as we just work the scheduling out, to go over what we now know is in the Mueller report. And there's a couple of things clear. Obviously, nothing has changed in terms of the way that some elements of the media, some elements of the Democratic Party, you know, played this, at least in terms of the Mueller investigation. We still don't know what's in the intelligence investigation. And I suspect we're going to know more. The bar, obviously, from an intelligence accusation is lower than it is from a criminal investigation. But there was a couple of things that were quite clear in the wake of the Mueller report. One is that there was evidence of collusion, but not enough to substantiate a conviction. There was, and by collusion, because there is no criminal definition of collusion, which we have also, you know, been aware of for a long time, the only thing that could have been charged would have been if the Trump campaign actively worked with Russian government officials to do what Russian government officials did in the campaign. So if they, like, here's a computer that you could use to go and hack into Florida's election system.
Oh, or, really? Thank you, bro.
Love it.
Or computers.
Or you guys should target these Facebook groups. That would have been necessary to prove based upon the conspiracy charges. What clearly did happen, according to the Mueller report, is that the campaign was aware of what the Russians were doing. And the Russians were aware that the campaign wanted them to and were willing to do stuff. And it was just one of those things where it's like two people realize they have aligned incentives and we don't need to do anything. We just have the guy go out and say, keep doing it, Russia. If you got those 30,000 emails, that would be good. And Russia can say, we like, you know, what the Trumps...
Deals.
Right. We make making deals. This is more just like the sort of the type of corruption that we rail against every single day. Like Joe Biden going to a Comcast, you know, lobbyist. I mean, it's basically that kind of stuff. One would think that as the head of a presidential campaign, you would say, like, hey, you're a foreign government. You really shouldn't be doing this, as opposed to like, keep doing it. So the obstruction charge, we also know that Mueller explicitly said, we can't charge anything. We can't charge the president with anything. Because of the DOJ Office of Legal Counsel. So there is a constitutional process to deal with these things. What is that constitutional process? Well, go read the Constitution. It's called impeachment. It's called Congress to look at it. So Bill Barr did subvert what Mueller wanted to have happen and anticipated would happen, which would be that the obstruction charges would go to Congress. There's obviously a lot more in the report, but those are the big takeaways in terms of those two issues. The other, in terms of the critiques, you know, and I'm looking back to the, I wouldn't call what happened with Michael Tracy in any way enlightening, other than his, he was going to spend 10 minutes to tell me that he was agnostic about the starting of this investigation that he thinks is actually like World War III starting now. But if it was the case that Donald Trump was specifically acting more, you know, belligerent towards Russia than necessary because of this pressure, because he was reacting to the pressure from the Mueller investigation, which he must have known would completely exonerate him because he knew that he didn't do anything, then I guess we would see, you know, broader overtures or more peace now would be breaking out now that it's, now that the public has exonerated him or in some way. The idea that this was a gift to Donald Trump, that Democrats and the news media gave Donald Trump an electoral gift, is not borne out by any of the data. Donald Trump's favorability rating is about as low as it's been. The number of people who vote against him is about as high as it's been. The number of people thinks he was lying about Russia and that this report makes him look bad is about as high as it could be. The idea that this was a gift to Donald Trump, if that's one of your talking points as to why there should have been nothing but skepticism around this investigation, I'm sorry, it just doesn't bear out. This investigation has uncovered a tremendous amount of corruption. This investigation would not have done so, likely, were it not for the premise in which it was launched. There wouldn't have been a special prosecutor. I mean, so it's uncovered a tremendous amount of corruption. It's also continuing to do so. There are many other investigations that were thrown out, that were basically placed out of this primary investigation. So if this investigation did not have happened, you would not have found these other investigations. You would not have had these other ongoing investigations. Obviously, there were excesses in the media coverage, but largely it seems to me that, and I don't think those critiques are invalid, but it really is like obsessing over the graphics and the music used for the invasion of the Iraq war that the media is using. Yeah, disgusting, wrong, shouldn't happen, part of a bigger problem, a societal disease, et cetera, et cetera. But there was also the war was also, you know, highly problematic. And if you start to look into the substance of this stuff, I think it was always, you know, sort of ridiculous to assume that that the Trump campaign had the facility to help Russia in their involvement in the campaign, whether you think it had any material impact or not. I mean, I guess conceivably, we still don't know why the polling data was given to a guy with connections to the Russian government. We'll never know, because Manafort lied about that. And we don't know why it was necessary for Manafort to lie and pretend like he was, you know, working with the government, when in fact he was feeding information to the Trump administration. We just don't know. But I don't know. And if you don't believe me, why not believe a guy who would be extremely skeptical as to whether there was lawbreaking that took place and whether you can actually be charged with obstruction if you can't prove an underlying crime?
So when the president asked his former advisor and my former colleague at Fox, K.T. McFarland, to write an untruthful letter to the file knowing the government would subpoena it, that's obstruction of justice. When the president asked Corey Lewandowski, his former campaign manager, to get Mueller fired, that's obstruction of justice. when the president asked his then White House counsel to get Mueller fired and then lie about it. That's obstruction of justice. When he asked Don McGahn to go back to the special counsel and change his testimony, that's obstruction of justice. When he dangled a pardon in front of Michael Cohen in order to keep Cohen from testifying against him, that's obstruction of justice. Why not charge him? Because the Attorney General of the United States would have blocked such a charge. Because the Attorney General of the United States is of the view that obstruction of justice can only occur if you're interfering with a criminal investigation of yourself. But that's not what the obstruction statute says. And that's not what law enforcement believes, and that's not what prosecutors do. Prosecutors prosecute people who interfere with government functions. That's what the president did by obstruction. Where's this going to end? We don't know. But I'm disappointed in the behavior of the president. His job is to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, to uphold and to enforce federal law, not to violate it. If he had ordered his aides to violate federal law, to save a human life, or to preserve human freedom, he would at least have a moral defense to his behavior. But ordering them to break federal law to save him from the consequences of his own behavior, that is immoral, that is criminal, that is defenseless, and that is condemnable.
Now, that is Democratic Congressman. No, wait a second. I'm sorry. That is MSNBC host. No, wait a second. No, that is Judge Napolitano on Fox News. And in fact, they wouldn't even let him shoot that in the building, apparently. They had to shoot it out in the street on 6th Avenue.
But, to grab the intern.
I think I know who I want to shoot on 5th
Avenue.
And look,
Mueller anticipated Congress looking at these questions of obstruction. And Bill Barr, who was picked because he did a 19-page memo describing why obstruction could not exist in this context without even knowing the facts. As a matter of law, it can't exist. Because if it's the case, and now Trump is refusing to let any of his people testify in front of Congress, the argument is, if Mueller was not allowed to give this to Congress, and the Justice Department says you cannot indict a sitting president, basically what we have is a situation where there is zero legal accountability for a sitting president. Nobody has ever asserted that. Well, maybe Nixon, but nobody has ever asserted this in their right mind, has ever asserted this. And by preventing Congress from looking specifically at that obstruction case, that is the subtext of the argument. Now, Congress is going to hopefully continue to investigate. And I hope we get proceedings. I mean, look, impeachment is a process, right? Do I think they should have an impeachment vote anytime soon? No. And I think they should continue and investigate, because let the American public see what's really, have a sense of what's going on. And see if they come around on impeachment, because it's a political process. And at the very least, holding them to account by investigating, making this stuff public. Personally, I am very much in favor of impeach the guy once he's out of office in 2020, 2021. I would feel much more comfortable about saving the impeachment hearings for then. But that's a different issue. But all right. We should go. Fun half. Folks, don't forget, you can support this program. We usually don't go this long, but, you know, we were gone for a week. Really, 8 days because of Passover. So you can support the free show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And as a way of thank you, we give you extra content every day, except for, I guess, when we're on vacation, guys. You know, in the fun half, we do all sorts of fun things, like mock Dave Rubin, or
got some good Dave Rubin stuff.
Mock today. Louis Gohmert, or no, actually, let me rephrase this. Talk about big ideas about Dave Rubin.
big ideas about Louis Gohmert.
I'm more interested in making fun of ideas than people.
I'm glad he's getting some criticism. I think it seems like he's getting criticism from all the right places.
I think he'll like it too, as someone who has fidelity to ideas, likes to see him challenged.
Make you think better.
Steel man ideas only. Steel, no straw man ideas. Steel man ideas.
And I think of Dave Rubin.
We will take your phone
steel
calls.
Steel man ideas.
We will take your phone calls. We will read your IMs. 646-257-3920. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. You got a couple of days to get 30% off your coffee. We have now, we bought 2 5-pound bags of Majority Report blend. So we may start our own little coffee shop here. Join the Majority Report, just pennies a day. Michael, back from your L.A. Extravaganza.
Yes, indeed.
Are you going to be doing a show this week?
Yeah, just take a break. No, by the way, L.A. was great. Thanks to everybody who came out. Thanks
yeah, good
for,
to see you.
Yeah, that was an amazing show. Thanks for the gifts. Thanks for all of the, that was amazing. We appreciate all of you. Tomorrow night, Dr. Maitha Al-Hassan is going to join us to talk about her book. And also the connections between the uprisings and changes happening in Sudan and Algeria, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, you know, all sorts of stuff we got to hit. There might be a surprise in studio guest, so you'll find out about that tomorrow if that indeed is the case. Check out the new illicit history of Deutsche Bank, from the Nazis to Donald Trump, Michael Brooks' show on YouTube, patreon.com/TMBS to get the whole thing.
Jamie is still on extended vacation, but check out The Intifada, patreon.com/The Intifada. And Matt with his new home studio.
Yeah, I got a new home studio, guys. So patreon.com/literary hangover to help me pay for not having a roommate anymore. I've got two new episodes that came out on April 19th, Looking Back on the Spanish War by George Orwell. It was written in 1943. It kind of he thinks of the Spanish Civil War as sort of the beginning of totalitarianism and sort of the inability to distinguish what's true in history. So check that out if you're into the fake news. And then for patrons only, I have a new George Orwell reading series called Orweller. And the first episode of that is up. It's called from his essay Spilling the Spanish Beans, which is right after he returned from after getting shot in the throat by a fascist in Spain, where he talks about how it's actually the problem with the communists and the liberal democracies, where they were pretending that the Spanish Civil War was just democracy against fascism, when really there was like an attempt at a classless society revolution. And so it was sort of like the problems of the popular front, how we talk about how we have to make amends with people like Jonathan Chait now. And you see what gets erased when you make those sorts of alliances. So check that out, patreon.com/literary hangover.
All right, folks, quick break, fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.